Today is the 14th of January 2019. I'm interviewing Selwyn Innes Hawthorne. Selwyn, would you like to tell us something about your family?
Yes, there's a very strong background from Ireland in my family, and perhaps a little bit embarrassing because prior to being in Ireland, my great-great-great-grandparents came from Scotland, and I think that they were part of the plantation, which is when Irish people were booted off their land and supplemented with the Scottish connection. Having seen a movie, The Wind and the Barley, it was quite an embarrassing moment just to see how all that happened. But okay, I can't change any of that. I live with it. I'm proud of the Irish connection. I'm proud of the Scottish connection. On the Hawthorne and the Power side, which are my two grandparents, paternal grandparents, the Powers arrived in Bluff in 1862 on Queen of the Mersey and progressively moved their way towards Hawke's Bay with a fairly long stay at Ashley, just out of Christchurch, and then coming through here where my grandfather, according to death certificate, was a cordial maker. But I know that he spent a lot of time on farms. In fact, he met my grandmother when he was working on a farm down at, it was called Kaikoura then, but it's now called Otani. And she was a power, Sarah Power. She was one of eight children, five of whom came to New Zealand as children, and three, Sarah, her sister Louisa, and her brother William, were born in New Zealand. So that was a bit of a mixed family there. That side of the family, she had a haberdashery shop in Hastings below the assembly hall, which is now all being strengthened. But they were very strong and had a very strong part in my life because they were very staunch Presbyterians, and we were brought up with pretty strong church connections. My father was in the choir at St. Andrew's in Hastings. So that's my paternal side of things. My mother was a Ghana. Her great-grandfather came out to New Zealand. He arrived in 1864 in Wellington, and 3 days later he was in Napier, and a couple of days after that he was out at the Omaranui battle, and he served under Colonel Whitmore in the land forces of the time. Bit of a character, actually. He rose to the rank of major, but I've got court-martial papers here, not being very happy with a junior rank, and I think actually the term was he struck him. It also was the end of his army career. But as a major, not the behaviour that's expected. He then went on to become an accountant, and he set up a department store in Palmerston North, Ghana's, which was similar to department stores of the day. All sorts of household, well, clothing.
Stuff and that people needed.
Yes. And that business carried on. My mother was brought up in Auckland. My father was brought up in Hastings. But when they actually met, my father was working in newspapers in Wellington. My mother lived in Auckland. Whenever he could, he would catch the overnight, I think it was called the Limited, from Wellington to Auckland on a Friday night. And he'd come back on a Sunday night. And that had a little bit of effect later on, because getting towards the end of his life, I decided I'd take him on a trip around the North Island to all the places where he had a connection. And he'd always said he'd never seen the centre of the North Island, central North Island, in daylight, because he was always traded in the middle of the night. So we had a wonderful trip to Auckland and return in daylight over a period of a couple of days. But they got married in 1936. They had my brother Lance Christopher in 1939. I was born in 1942, and my sister Julia Florence was born in 1944, all in Napier.
Are they still here?
My brother passed away in September 2017. My sister is itinerant. They've done pretty well, and they've got houses all over the place, and so they just move around depending on how the fishing is. That's the wealthy side of the family. From my birth in Napier in 1942, I've got some memories soon after. I think the nearest one was having a long summer holiday in 1947. I started school in September 47. I was at school for about 3 weeks, and then didn't have to go back to school till about April 1948 because the polio, everything was closed down. Schools, movie theatres, everything. I've got vague memories of it. As I have at one stage there of a particular plane that is of interest to me, I can remember seeing six Mosquito fighter bombers flying over Napier. And I think I was walking home from Napier Central School to our house in Shakespeare Road, and I think it would have been perhaps about 1948. And I can still remember it. And of course, the revival of that particular aircraft and the input of New Zealanders, amazing input of New Zealanders into restoration of or revival of that type of aircraft.
They're actually building new ones.
Yes, the first three have gone to America. I was actually at the launch of the first one, the one that Jerry Yagan bought. I'm a member of the Auckland Aviation Forum, and we actually had an interview with Jerry Yagan. He came out to our open day the weekend that the public were introduced to that KA1114 Mosquito. But yeah, so that's sort of digressing a little bit there, but aircraft are a very important interest that I have. From there, I did the normal things that kids did. Had a paper run, 6 and 3 a week, which was 6 days delivery plus collection on Saturday morning.
But think how much it would buy, though.
Oh, I bought a brand new bike in 12 months. Loaned it to my brother after 3 weeks and it got stolen. But then that's another story. Then I paid £26 for my first watch, which was from paper run. Did all those sorts of things. Got very interested in sailing. Member of the Napier Sailing Club. And had a lot of fun down there. In fact, my childhood was a dream childhood because we were pretty close to the municipal baths in Napier. Sure. Mum would give us nightmints and we'd disappear from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night during the summer. Come home brown as berries. Then, of course, later when I got interested in sailing, that was outdoors. Everything I've been interested in has been outdoors. Sure. But not so much the competitive sport, because when I was 15 and a half, my parents moved to Powatoka out of Napier and bought a country store and bus run, and it had the telephone exchange. It was a real country store in those days. Mm. And those turned out to be, Powatoka's my dream place. They were great years. My parents wanted me to go to boarding school. I declined as much as I could. So I went private boarding so I could come home every weekend. I think if I'd gone to boarding school, I would have gone mad being cooped up all weekend with the regimentation that goes with it. So living in Powatoka was great. Home every weekend.
Where was the store at Powatoka?
On the main road, just where Henley Road turns off, opposite the hall. The building burned down 18 months, a little bit less than 18 months ago.
You know where Jack Ball used to be? Yeah. It was the Simmental stuff I was thinking of. So it was on that top flat, was it?
Now, Powatoka was further on from Risington. Jack Ball had two farms. He went down to his father's farm on Riverbank, just by the Risington school. Yeah. Okay. That land, of course, has now been bought by Sam Whitelock, the author of both farms. I hope it doesn't go dairying, because it would spoil the Mungoni stream, which runs right through there. So in Powatoka, still have some very, very dear friends who live up there. I wanted a career in the Navy. I wanted to go in as an officer cadet, and I had medical test in October 1959, and heard in about the second week of January 1960 that I had been declined because of my natural eyesight in my left eye. It really hacked me off, but I'll say this, that within 3 days I'd signed up to be a diesel apprentice at Gough and Hayman Hastings, and that just shows you how easy it was to get a job in those days.
So you must have done your time when Rick Frogley was...
No. Bob Lowe was my service manager. Jock
Bob.
Laidlaw, Alfie Godwin, Kerry Farquharson.
Is Kerry still around?
Yeah, but not in New Zealand. Kerry was an amazing mechanic. He went and plied his trade on the big projects. It was a place in those days where you could make big money.
Gough obviously had very good training discipline, because anyone that came out of there seemed to go and find very good jobs.
Well, it was the era, but why mechanics were so good in those days, particularly if you're working on different sort of equipment, was import restrictions. You couldn't just go and grab another part. You weren't a fitter of new parts. Mm. You had to adapt stuff, you had to repair stuff. Yeah. And it was a massive learning curve. You know, we had people around town like Tourist, their engineering workshop, Eric Jepson, George Patton, all those sorts of guys who we relied on.
So you did your apprenticeship there. Yeah. When you finished?
Well, my parents, the business had expanded quite dramatically. And I went and worked at home for 2 years, helping my parents. We had school buses by then, and the main bus run to town, which included the newspaper, the mail, the milk, the bread, passengers, all that sort of thing. And I used to do the run to town about 2 days a week, but I always did the last part of the run from Powatoka to Puketitri and back to Powatoka each evening. after my father had done the town run.
So very much part of the local community.
Yes, yes. And it was a very inclusive community too.
Did you go into the Dartmoor area?
No, we just came up the main road, Napier, Risington, Partoga, Pukatitri.
Sure.
And that was RD4, Rural Delivery 4, plus Private Bag Napier deliveries. And that was always very interesting. You met some amazing people on the bus. The most amazing thing, of course, was morning talk from the kids. So I've got some wonderful tales I've heard from kids, parents' behaviour and so on, which will still remain locked up, secrets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Morning talk was brilliant. And of course, in those days, our winters were more severe than they are today, and numerous occasions the road wouldn't be closed for perhaps more than half a day, but we used to get some pretty good snowfalls. Partoga, yes. Pukatitri in those days. And still I can remember my father saying that getting out to pick up a private bag at one farmer's gate, he climbed out onto the fescue, and the fescue gradually lowered him to the ground as it broke from the ice that was in
it.
You know, when you think about it, I think Napier had one frost this year. You know, after a bit over 2 years working for my parents, I went and worked on Hawkston Station for Neil Alexander for 1 year. And I broke in the last of the scrub land that was on Hawkston Station. And it was at that stage I thought, well, okay, I was heading on to being 24 then, that I thought, I wouldn't mind making a career out of contracting. I wasn't going to go back to my trade. I earned very, very little as a journeyman after completing my trade. So anyway, I married Heather in November 1966, November the 26th, it was election day. My mates were a little bit annoyed about it because in those days the pubs were closed on election day.
What was her maiden name?
Heather Doris Stevenson. And our first place we lived in was in Domain Road in Hamoana. An idyllic life there, right by the beach. Although I was very, very busy with having set up a contracting business. I set up contracting, mowing hay for Perry Hingston, who was a bailing contractor.
Yes,
and a bit of a connection there because my mother was deeply involved with Napier basketball, as it was then. It's now called netball. My mother was president there, and Stella Hingston, Perry's mother, had a similar position with basketball in Hastings.
Yes.
But decided to go contracting for them, and we struck a couple of years similar to the one we've just had in Hawke's Bay 2018. Summer rain. Green summer. We had about three of them, and I decided that I didn't want to get too involved with hay, so I decided that I might try and revive silage as a means of getting winter storage of feed, because you didn't have to rely on drying a crop in good weather to actually get it in. So I bought a Brady forage harvester off Hilton Meikle. Very, very basic, single chop. Didn't make good silage, and yes, it was a bit of a dog of a machine.
But you had to start somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And so, in wandering out, I'd built up a very long-standing connection with the Walmsley family, and Ralph Walmsley came out one day and said that, you know, they were going to become agents for a Gale double chop forage harvester. So I thought, well, this will do me. He said, you don't need a lot of horsepower for it. Well, it was a bit of a misnomer. It was a good salesman, Dad, actually, because in Hawke's Bay, with so much rye grass and being harder to cut and more dense than clover, the very first day I had this forage harvester, I almost bored the oil in my David Brown tractor, David Brown 990. So that required a visit to a different tractor agent, and I went to Tourist Kelt, or MJ Kelt and Co. was at the time, and bought a David Brown 1200 as having the right PTO horsepower to drive that machine. Spent some time doing that, a couple of 3 years doing that, and then got involved in ground spreading because I'd bought Walmsley's agricultural contracting business. I inherited a Caterpillar D4 in amongst that, which used to do the summer. I had employees, tractor drivers at the stage doing that, and used to do a lot of the contour ploughing for the traditional summer crop of Jamolia. Had a very good run on very well-established properties right through Marakakaho. So in the late autumn, when there wasn't a lot of work going on, I used to top dress with the D4, towing an Anderson trailer bin. I got a little bit interested in fertiliser at that stage. And all that was manual handling. That was
bags.
No bulk at that stage. Right. Yeah, but still shovel from the truck into the bin. And I'd do two trips from the fertiliser works, 14 tonnes a day. And I was as fit as a buck rat in those days. But I got interested in it and thought, I'll give ground spreading on rubber tyres a bit of a go, and made contact because I'd done some work down at Mungarapa Station, and I'd seen this ground spreader in the back of the Mugarapa shed. So I spoke to Don Mowat and ended up owning an ex-international four-wheel drive ground spreader. I only had that for 6 months, and I ordered a brand new international six-wheeler. It was the second automatic truck on the east coast of the North Island, and that was one magnificent truck. It had amazing capabilities, and yeah, that was a great move. But round about 1972, the Arabs started kicking up and wanting more money for their oil. In a petrol V8 truck that did 3 miles to the gallon empty and 3 miles to the gallon full. The reason why it only did 3 miles to the gallon empty was that aerodynamically it was like a brick. That I decided I'd go to diesel, and International couldn't help me in that respect, so I bought a brand new 1113 Mercedes four-wheel drive spreader. But it was nowhere near the truck that Cable Price had intimated that it would, by way of performance on the road. Yeah, and then, of course, it was a prototype. If it had worked, it would have been absolutely amazing, because it could throw super 120 feet with a massive turbine in it. But we had problems keeping blades on the turbine. Of course, when you lose a blade on a turbine at about 4,000 revs, it makes a bit. So at that stage, I bailed out of that by selling my business to Farmers Transport, who were very pleased to get some of their clients back, because I hadn't specifically targeted them, but yeah.
They wanted to work with you.
That involved a four-year goodwill transfer contract with them, which I left after 3 years and 364 days just to show a little bit of discontent with how things had gone. But anyway, it was at that stage, because I also ended up with a trade restraint, I thought, oh, I'll just fill in at Tomorrow Works for 6 weeks while I get myself sorted out. I went to Tomorrow for about 12 weeks. And I'd always shown great interest in a plant that I used to be still living out at Tiawonga, a plant that I used to pass every day to go into town, and that was the Pacific Freezing Works at Rockatoo. Yes. Of course, I'd heard quite a lot about Graham Lowe, who's a man that to this day I admire the ground that he walks on. And so I applied to go and work there for perhaps about a year, just once again while I sorted myself out. That was in 1979, and I retired from there in 2004. I had 25 years working for Pacific Freezing, yes, through Low Walker, through, yes, Richmond Limited, and yes, its various iterations from the original company. And I retired early, age 62, having had wonderful experiences working in that group. I'd gone from starting in the lowest possible job you can get on that plant. It was a crap job. And I ended up, I managed plants on a secondment basis for Richmond at Storford Lodge for the New Zealand division, at Tairoa for the Bobby Calf operations, set up quality control systems at Te Kauwhata for Richmond, and at Otaki when they bought that plant, and also did some work over at Waitotara when that came into the fold. Yeah, so it was at that stage that I retired. I had two children. Michael was born in 1967, and Sarah was born in 1968. They're still working locally.
What do they do?
Michael is a carpenter. Carpenter par excellence. He'll never be in his own business, but he just builds beautiful houses. And my daughter has had a retrain, and in February 2018, she qualified to Bachelor of Nursing. And she's local at this point in time, but I think she may just utilise it with her children having grown up. I think she might just follow the big money that's overseas.
So they both have children?
My daughter has my only two grandchildren, Dylan and Jesse. I met both of them this Christmas. Dylan lives in Dunedin. Went to Otago University to do a sports degree. Qualified. He went down there wearing a pair of shorts and a rugby league singlet. I visited him, I think, three times now in the middle of winter. He still wears shorts and a rugby league singlet. But he has got grandparents. His paternal grandparents are in Dunedin, but he's an Otago boy, full stop now. He won't be back. But he was up at New Year. I caught up with him. Jesse, my youngest, from the age of about two, whenever we walked along Tiawonga Beach, you'd see a bent piece of wood and it would be a gun. If it was a long piece of wood, it would be a rifle. And he has just come out of his first introduction to the New Zealand Army, top trainee, top cadet, and he's signed up for a career in the infantry in the New Zealand Army. He'll go a long way, but just talking to him, I took him out for dinner last Friday and he couldn't wait till Saturday to get back to camp. It's his dream from, as I say, as a 2-year-old, you pick up any piece of wood, it'll be a gun of some sort.
Have you ever been to Kalgoorlie?
No, I haven't, but from the point of view of machinery, I still get two trucking magazines a month. No, I haven't owned a truck since 1974. It's in my blood.
You never forget.
Never forget it, and it all rolls into why I'm involved with Little Elms Trucking.
Yeah. So now you've retired.
Yes, yeah, retired in 2004. Retired early because the company had a very nasty experience in a takeover from a company in the South Island, PPCS, whose reputation went to the bottom of a heap with the way they tried to buy Richmond out. And the day that PPCS took over Richmond was the day, well, within a week I had left. I knew I would be Dog Tucker. I joined a group of people who opposed the takeover. I joined the Bell Group, which was a group of farmers. I was the only salaried person within the company who joined that group. And I knew that I would be Dog Tucker. And we came to a very mutual agreement where they paid me the right amount of money. And I retired. 62 at the time, and I have no regrets whatsoever for that move. But just harking back to Jess, he will do very, very well in the Army. At school age, he represented New Zealand and Japan twice at the World Karate Championship. He went to Australia for a weekend to look at a tournament over there. He came back the Australian Karate age group champion. He really didn't go over there to compete, however.
How long did you live in Tiawonga?
Oh, well, for 34 years.
That's a few haircuts ago now.
Well, 2007. We loved it at Tiawonga, myself more than Heather. But no, it was a wonderful place to bring kids up. But you had to keep an eye on your kids because there was a very strong drug culture in Tiawonga. We kept an eye on our kids, and in fact at one stage we actually broke up a friendship between one of our children and a friend because we could see where that would end up. But there was a lot of drugs out there. But my kids had a ball out there. It's everything outdoors, down in the lagoon and out to the Cape. And
yeah. Quite idyllic, yes.
The Burden family, who are quite amazing sort of people, are very much a part of our children's upbringing at Tiawonga.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, Moana School, there's some wonderful people involved with the school. Gordon Bambry on the school committee, Rary Unahi on the school committee, Alex Robin on the school committee, and his wife Violet, a teacher there for...
And the headmaster was...
Well, Mr. Bott, and then John, 76-year memory, bit of a problem there. His father was the headmaster at Taradale High School. Oh, dear. And I see this gentleman quite often, too.
Anyway, so after that, you started looking for other projects.
Yes, well, when I left Richmond in 2004, I rang an ex-plant manager who at that stage was assisting a friend of his in tidying up a business that had expanded far too fast. This was Greg Roberts in, at Genera, based in Mount Maunganui, and they used to do fumigation of cargoes at sea. And I rang Greg to say, could I use him as a reference just in case anything came up? And he asked me how long I'd been retired, and I said, oh, 6 weeks. He said, that's long enough. He said, you're coming to work for me. So that got me involved in voyages between various ports in New Zealand to Korea and China on log vessels fumigating cargo because the Chinese didn't like our soil bacteria. We had to fumigate any cargo that went into China. Not so bad going into South Korea. But when I look at China now and think how grubby that country is...
You'd wonder why they bothered.
Absolutely. But however, that's trade. And having come through 25 years in the meat industry, where we had supposed hygiene standards imposed on us from the US and from the EU, which were nothing less than trade barriers, actually. They weren't hygiene barriers.
No.
I sort of understood it. So I did that on an intermittent basis. It was an 18-day trip. After the first one, when I came back, I said, because when we got to our destination, the company put us up in a rather nice hotel for 2 to 3 nights. I said, I'd rather have the money, I'd rather stay somewhere cheaper and spend longer in the country and have a look around. But yes, we used to get 18 days on the water over there, 2 or 3 days in a nice hotel, and then the company would fly us back to New Zealand. So I saw a lot of South Korea, saw a lot of China. Loved South Korea, loved the South Korean people. Because amongst the older South Korean people, if you wear something that shows a Kiwi or New Zealand or something like that, you're taonga to them. They want to touch you. But it's a wonderfully vibrant economy. I know, okay, that their political scene isn't that kosher, a lot of money changes hands doing deals in anything in Korea, but the people at grassroots level are nice. And you see kids going to school, and a couple of young boys going to school, they'll have their arm across the shoulder. That's how we went to school.
Yeah, that's right.
We weren't taken in a car.
No. When I was about 8, my parents said it was time I went to Sunday school, so go up to St. Luke's. Yeah. On the way there, I met John Beale and Geoffrey Isles going to the Presbyterian Church. I was there for 2 years before Mum and Dad. No, I didn't. And then, to top it all off, when Kay and I were married, I had to be baptised at 23.
Gee, there were some pretty strong views on religion in those days.
Well, you know, people like Canon Button were so severe, and we had Canon Weymouth and Havelock.
Oh, Stephen Weymouth, yeah. He ended up as the minister for Partaker, without a Pukitapa.
That's
Now, I can remember, because living in Shakespeare Road and going to Napier Central School, we lived pretty close to the Marist and the convent school up on the hill in Napier. And of course, we'd be going against the flow of the Catholic boys coming to their school. We'd be going in the other direction. Then after school, in reverse. And there were one or two good sort of ambush places. And in those days, there were quite strong feelings of Protestant Catholic. And we used to try and rush to get to this place where we had the advantage of height, plus a clay bank that we could break clay out of to throw at the Catholic boys on their way home from school.
All part of the world coming together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was dogma. It was, well, I still remember when Norman Kirk changed, dying on his deathbed, supposedly converted to Catholicism. You know, there's a lot of strong feelings about that. And that was in the 70s?
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, that's sort of by the by. But I'd had a wonderful life in Hawke's Bay. Hawke's Bay had been very kind to me, and it was the climate, business sector, the farming scene, everything about it. And I thought, well, I've got to put something back into this. And I'd been to a trucking for child cancer truck cavalcade day in, I think, about 1999. And I got there just a little bit later, not that there was a real start time, you just sort of wandered in. And I was very impressed with what they're doing, and I've always been a reasonably generous person. And I couldn't find anybody to give money to. So I rang Ian Emerson. A couple of days later, I said, geez, Emo, I couldn't find anybody to give some money to. And he intimated then, well, okay, if you're that keen on us, you better join us. So I got involved with Trucking for Hawke's Bay Child Cancer Charitable Trust, which was set up to ensure that the money that was raised in Hawke's Bay for child cancer was spent in Hawke's Bay. Because the business protocol for Child Cancer Foundation in those days was that if X amount of money was raised in an area, 50% of it went to head office. We didn't like that. So we used to dish out the funds that we raised. And that sort of grew on me a little bit. Biennially, every couple of years, we'd have another cavalcade. And the numbers were getting bigger and bigger. The number of vehicles participating getting bigger. And consequently, the income that we earned was growing quite a bit. So in the end, I was asked if I'd be a trustee of the Track and Hawke's Bay Child Cancer Charitable Trust, which has morphed into Little Elms Charitable Trust, largely because it's a hell of a long name, Trucking for Hawke's Bay Child Cancer Charitable Trust. And I have typed that name 1,000 times. And each time I type it in brackets, I put TFHBCCCT after it. So then all I have to use is the THFBCCCT when I'm talking about them. But I like their aims. Only through a friend's daughter, we'd had contact with leukemia in 1974, when one of the kids' school friends died of it. Leukemia in those days had a survival rate of 20%, 80% sadly succumbing to it. And in that time, it's just been so interesting to see where science has progressed it through that it's, you know, complete reversal. 20% lose the battle, but 80% survive. And that's been very, very pleasing because it is progress. But a little bit later, involvement with Track and Hawke's Bay Child Cancer Charitable Trust, because I do a lot of other charitable work, I assist Maori wardens, the Ahariri Maori wardens at various functions, sort of doing not so much security, because we're not security, we do marshalling, controlling, and crowd control, and all that sort of thing. And I've been involved in a project where the Carter Building Group, through Peter Edwards, the manager of Carter's at the time and locally, and certified builders had decided to do a fundraiser for Cranford Hospice. And up on the Marine Parade in Napier, at the end of the Marine Parade at Allison Street there, they thought they'd build a house. having built it, that they would auction it, and the net proceeds from it pass on to Cranford Hospice. Well, I was involved with that for 4 days, and duly the house was auctioned, and I think somewhere around about $120,000 net ended up in the hands of Cranford Hospice. With a marvellous effort on behalf of Carters and the Certified Builders Group. I actually knew the chap who bought it. Barry Simmons bought the house at auction.
Not the Barry Simmons.
The Barry Simmons, yeah. So that was a very successful venture, and it's amazing that when you have a success and you're helping some charity, that just the fuzzy feelings that you get which drive you on to the next thing. But anyway, after that auction, Peter Edwards from Carters and Richard Kepka from the Certified Builders and I sat down on the beachfront and said, well, what next? And I just couldn't miss the opportunity. I said, well, Track of Hawke's Bay Child Cancer, we've got a block of land in Hastings. And I'll tell you shortly about how we got that block of land. I said, Child Cancer Foundation, local branch, want an office built on it. So I said, I'll put that into the rings. Would you like to think about what we could do there? But anyway, going back to the block of land. Every year prior to having our truck cavalcade, some of the trustees would meet with the Child Cancer Foundation branch in Hastings and ask them what they wanted money for. It might be for funding petrol vouchers for parents who were absolutely distraught over their situation with a sick child, or food parcels, or travel to Auckland to Starship, all that sort of thing. In this particular time, the committee of the CCF said, we'd like an office building. And on the way back from that meeting, Ian Emerson and Sandy Walker, two of the five trustees at that stage, the initial trustees were Ian Emerson, Sandy Walker, Ginny Thompson, and Doug Elliott from Conroy Removals. And when Doug moved on, I replaced him. But anyway, Ian and Sandy, on their way back from this meeting, saw a sign on the Elms Transports property for sale. And because the Elms connection with transport, our connection through Track of the Child Cancer connection, Ian decided that he'd give John a ring, John Elms, because the Elms were a wonderful family in Hastings. They put so much back into Hastings, particularly in the cancer field. They donated Elm Cottage down at Cranford Hospice. John Elms' wife died of cancer. John eventually himself died of cancer. Well, John said to Ian, Ian, this place, we've got an offer on this property for $450,000. An Auckland developer wants to buy it. I'll tell you what I'll do. You can have it for $360,000. Now, that was a massive discount.
Absolutely.
$90,000 discount. That showed the calibre of the man. But the problem was, that was a Monday, and the offer was going unconditional on the Friday. We had to find $360,000. Oh. And how that was done, through our wonderful solicitor, now trustee, Robin Bell from Biss and Moss and Napier. He had connections who had been on the fringes of Track of a Child Cancer for a couple of times with contributions. It was actually Kelly White, and she was Kelly Harris, Sir Lou Harris's granddaughter, yes. Doug Harris's daughter. And Robin got this deal for us, all in 4 days. Kelly would give us, through the J.D. Harrison Family Trust, would donate $150,000, loan us $150,000, and with the balance, by claiming on the GST, we had the money to buy the property.
Isn't that wonderful?
All done in 4 days. So that deal was done. We ended up owning 310 to 314 Orchard Road, three sections, yes. 310, 312 and 314, which was the old Elms truck yard. And of course, it was this land that I was talking about when discussed it with Peter Edwards from Carters and Richard Kepka from Certified Builders, that we would like to build an office. Wow. Somewhere along the line, in the enthusiasm, the plan that we ended up with, using only half of that land, we ended up building an office, six chalets, and a respite house. And perhaps one of the most amazing community-spirited structures that you could imagine. But anyway, the situation was that we decided we'd build this office block and the six chalets. The house came in because Pete Edwards from Carters, his words were, we might as well make it a half-decent project and put a house on it as well. Well, that was a pretty big deal. That was about $1.3 million worth of buildings. Fortuitously, I had contacted a friend of mine from Mosgiel who was going to do a truck rally in the South Island. I said, I'd like to be on that rally, John. A guy called John Symes, he was a vehicle inspector at Mosgiel. And he said, leave it with me, but get to Nelson on Sunday. So we had the cavalcade on the Saturday. I went home, had to deal with an incident we'd had on the parade where one of our truck cavalcade entrants had driven into another truck cavalcade entrance. I had to deal with the police on that one. Anyway, I was on a plane for Nelson the following morning, and I got out to where this rally was starting. And we were going to drive from Nelson to Invercargill via the West Coast. And I got introduced to a guy called Ron Thornley, who owned a 1960 International AS-160 four-wheel drive ex-Forest Service fire engine. And I drove that from Nelson to Invercargill. And on the way, we had court sessions for misbehaviour and all sorts of funny things, and we were fining people. And one stage there in Greymouth, it was, that's right, we actually closed off a street and we wouldn't let anybody through unless they put some money in our bucket. Well, that was West Coast style anyway. Yes. They did some funny things. It was quite amazing, really. But we ended up in Invercargill on the Friday of Labour weekend and had some wonderful experiences on the way. We'd gone to Invercargill to celebrate the extension of the Bill Richardson truck collection. It wasn't a museum at that stage, it was a private collection. And for that, they had a big truck cavalcade themselves on the Saturday, and our vehicles, the 70 trucks that were in it, were part of that. And once again, I had my two buckets and the wife of one of the truck drivers who had a vehicle in it. We went around Invercargill rattling bucket under people's noses. We had quite a good collection. I think we got about $600. That added to about $600 that we'd collected on the way in fines and so on. Sure. It was pretty good. But then Shona Richardson, the widow of Bill Richardson from the massive HWR conglomerate, Allied Concrete, Allied Petroleum, a company with about 3,000 employees today, she heard what we were doing. And in the final night, there was a dinner up at the Ascot Lodge Hotel in Invercargill. She said, we'll have an auction. She said, we'll give you the money from the auction. And they had these wonderful table centerpieces that they'd done up and all sorts of things that they auctioned off. And on the Monday morning, on Labor Day 2007, I got onto the plane with $12,000, $1,200 from the collections. But, you know, people like Buff Wedding, he paid $1,000 for a table centrepiece.
Isn't that a wonderful tribute? But it's the people that were working with him who have also made a major contribution in his name.
I was there a month before. Last year, I've decided to sign off. I'm 76 years old now. I've been to the South Island countless times, had some wonderful experiences. So I went to the bottom half of the South Island last year to say farewell to different things. Met up with Shona Richardson, with a view to having her come through for the Little Elms 10th anniversary that we had last year. But the collection is absolutely magnificent, and it just shows you how these things grow. You would remember seeing all the ragtop V8 coupes there. That was given to him, that
was
collection.
Oh.
From 1931 to 1949, every year there is one vehicle of each year, and that was given to him by an ex-competitor from Tapanui, who is now in Australia, and he had this collection. It's the most amazing collection of vehicles. Absolutely brilliant. And for their motorbike collection, they heard a collection of 200 motorbikes was likely to be sold because of illness, sickness, and it was likely to go overseas. They went and bought 200 motorbikes, and within 18 months, or nearly 2 years, that collection is in Invercargill, and it's now 300 motorbikes and growing. But that's the Southland style. I always believed, and I had a lot to do with Southland people through the Groundspread industry, and that's why they have long nights in Southland.
But it's a miserable place until you go indoors, and then you're right.
Well, they've got these lovely heaters down there. I'm just trying to think of the name of them. Junker heaters. They light them in May or April, and they put the fire out in about November. I think they make cheese rolls on the top of them too. But yeah, the thing about the long nights in Southland, I've always had this opinion that I think it's time for them to go to bed early and think how they can screw the Inland Revenue Department and the Customs Department, because they are very, very canny people.
Very careful.
Well, not only that, they've expanded. When you look at what's happened here, They controlled farmlands, which started in Hawke's Bay, right, set up in New Zealand with that Ravensdown, once again the Deep South, and the Richardson Group have recently bought Farmers Transport and all that conglomerate. They are very canny investors. They own Hastings Building Society. They are very canny people. I do love them. They are really
That's
nice
great.
People.
So, obviously you still need to fundraise each year to keep the pot boiling.
Yes, yeah. So, building the premises, on October the 6th, 2008, we started building Little Elms. As I said, an office block with beautiful stone cladding, six chalets and a respite house. It was Monday, October the 6th at 6:30 a.m. We had 120 carpenters on site. We finished building it on Friday the 10th of October. In 5 days we had built the premises, including putting the lawn down and planting the garden and putting the paving down. It was an amazing display of community spirit. And I still harken back to the story. People at all levels contributed. And it was a charity build. And once again, the time was donated by, the payment was donated by somebody for the time that Buck and Joe Shelford were down for the whole week. Money Man, who on TV3 used to cut people's credit cards up and tell them how to live properly. Greer Robson from Shortland Street and two of her friends were down here for the whole week. And Coxie, who himself now is in 2018 is ailing quite sadly from a cancer invasion, who had his own TV show, the Carters TV show. They were all down there contributing. The major building supplies firms like James Hardie's, Fletcher's, all of those companies contributed. I spent a whole year fundraising for Little Elms after I came back from the South Island. We had input from Kahununu Iwi Incorporated. They contributed well over 100,000. Freemasons contributed well over 100,000.
Eastern See, that, that's a group of people who don't get a great deal of acknowledgement from the community, the Freemasons.
Freemasons, yeah, absolutely.
Just incredible.
Unbelievable what they contribute. Yes. And I'm going back to knock on their door again because we've got room to expand. Eastern and Central Community Trust funded the Respite House. Weem Trust, the Partoka Family Trust, Tom McCormick's Family Trust, that was, because of his involvement. And just by the way, the Weem Trust were the first one to, they purchased over $1 million, the MRI scanner that went into the hospital. Yeah, and that was a massive contribution.
Yes.
Yeah, that brought Hawke's Bay's healthcare quantum step forward. So we had all those organisations there, and then of course there are the people who, the various Rotary clubs, but I'd gone around, I covered the footprint of the Hawke's Bay District Health Board, which was basically Mahia to Takapo. I visited Lions clubs, Rotary clubs, Probus, U3A, all sorts of clubs, Townswomen's Guild, talking to them to get support for the organisation. And the support came in all sorts of ways, but one of the most notable ones for me was a lady rocked up with this little carton with 11 muffins in it. I was a little bit concerned that there are only 11. This was to feed the crew because all the crew on site were fed with contributions from community and local food companies and so on. And I said to them, well, there are only 11 in here. She sort of very demurely said, well, she'd like to try one. That was where it all came from. We had people donated soft drinks and so on. Higher Pool, wonderful with the prices and sometimes no price at all for a lot of higher equipment. Sure. And in doing so, we weren't quite sure how we could thank the people who had helped us. You know, a letter wouldn't quite cut the mustard. Mm. So we commissioned TV Hawke's Bay to do a supposed time-lapse DVD of the week-long construction, which they duly did. And we've tried to get as many of those DVDs to as many of the people who helped us as possible.
Sure.
As a memorial to or memory of what was a very, very unique sort of a project. Big Save came on board in a massive way with regard to the supply of the furnishings, because you imagine an office, six chalets, and they are quality. Oh yeah, just talking of quality, there's a group called the Future Proof Group, and where we had a specification for a product in the construction, might have been tapware, might have been carpet or anything like that, they came on board, and in many cases they upgraded the standard of that donation to a much higher spec. So we weren't really concerned about price of a lot of stuff because we got the highest quality. So anyway, we had an opening on the 12th of October 2008. Wonderful day. We put on a fun day down at Kirkpatrick Park for the kids, and we had a band there and blow up these sort of slides. And the organisation has gone very, very well ever since. We're still out looking for money. A little bit later, because we had an L-shaped block, and it was L-shaped because John Elms was still alive at the time, and his house was part of the L. Well, it wasn't part. It turned the L into an oblong. And he had intimated to us that we could buy that, once again, discounted, which we eventually did in 2012, I think it was, which squared the block off. Now, we've only built on half the land that we own. But recently, because of the situation that the Cancer Society had in Nelson Street, we have sold the John Elms house block to the Cancer Society for the same price we paid for it in 2012. They've got a good deal. They have since gone on to buy two adjacent back sections of state houses, plus a state house, which will give them more land and eliminate the need for so much traffic coming in off Orchard Road, which can be a bit of a problem. So they've embarked on a project to relocate to the Little Elms area. We're still at Little Elms. In the interim, they have a lease of our office block and a lease of the respite house, which is their basic clinic. They're going to remove the John Elms house and they're going to build a big headquarters there, which will eventually release the office block and the respite house back for us. We are getting such demand because just prior to the build, we realised that, hey, here we were building something for child cancer, but child cancer is only one of many ailments, terrible ailments that affect kids, because we are targeted towards kids. So we actually become, instead of Truck and Hawke's Bay Child Cancer Charitable Trust, we became the Hawke's Bay Trucking for Child Care Trust to take into account cystic fibrosis, which is a terrible, terrible thing. So our usage expanded, and we're there to cover the accommodation for parents of sick children from within the Hawke's Bay District Health Board footprint, which when we initially built it included the Chatham Islands, and we had a lot of Chatham Islands people coming over. And we also had to expand it because one of the greatest users of our services now is the SCBU unit, the Special Care Baby Unit of the District Health Board, where prem babies or special care, sometimes there for, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. And if they're from outside the area, the parent or the mother, or both, need to be close by. And here we are, we're just across the road from the Hastings Fallen Soldiers Memorial Hospital. That service is in demand, and we are about to embark on building another 3 chalets, which will fill our land.
And are you still coping with the need?
Yes, yes. So we're often full right up. There still are the local motels around there. We must have affected them in quite a big way because we can accommodate about 18 to 20 people, I think.
And the fees for using them?
If the person is outside a 70K from the Memorial Hospital, the government through the District Health Board will pay for that. Otherwise, we ask for a fee. If it can't be met, well, it becomes a contribution.
Guy who was involved with the Elms boys, let's see, it would have been 1950. We used to cart hay. You know, that was such a happy place. Yeah. Those people never, ever looked for another job.
No, they certainly stuck there, didn't they? Goodness gracious me.
So anyway, you know, all of those people that bring those big trucks are making a contribution through the cost. It's not free bringing trucks.
Well, it would actually be a whole lot cheaper for them to give a donation, take that truck off the road, pay the driver. It's impossible to actually work out what the cost benefit of that is. Unbelievable.
It was the fellowship.
Absolutely.
You lose that.
Yep,
and
yep.
Of course, these guys with their big trucks, you got to show it to people, you got to let people sit in it.
That's an amazing contribution. The downside of it all is that if a truck from Auckland comes down, he invariably tries to pick up a load that a Hawke's Bay carrier might be.
Backload, I know.
There are times about encouraging the wider branch to get people in, you know, that have it. That's the generosity of those guys.
So, do you do anything else for relaxation?
Heather and I cycled all over New Zealand. We did things like Cape Ringer to Cape Palliser was one of our trips, cycle touring. We did silly things like we heard on a TV show, the red-headed woman
Yes, I know who you mean.
Said that the West Wind Cafe at Rangiora had the best coffee in New Zealand. So we biked down to try the coffee. Next year, she said, the Pleasant Point Cafe made the best custard squares. So we biked down there. We cycled over 12,000 kilometres in the South Island.
Did you ever go to Fleurs, Mauraki?
She was at Clyde when we saw her. Went to Mauraki. Yeah. We cycled into Milford Sound. Basically, the only place that I really wanted to cycle was to cycle from Ohio into Nightcaps. We biked past it. And I also wanted to do the Shenandoah from Murchison through to Springs Junction.
Amazing, isn't it? You know, it's all there for the taking, isn't it? So what haven't you told me now?
Well, our interest in tramping through the Heratonga Tramping Club was a very long connection. We did heaps of tramping, and my 1990 sesquicentennial project was that I'd been told at work that I had too many holidays accrued and burned them up. And why I had too many holidays accrued was the fact that they used to call me back to do jobs that I was supposed to be holidaying. So I planned a trip. A tramping mate of mine heard I was doing it and asked if he could come with me. And I sort of kicked it over. I wanted to do it on my own, but I said, oh no, you can join. So Heather took us over to Mount Egmont and we walked home. That was my sesquicentennial project.
Gosh,
took a month. We had a wonderful time. Richmond originally didn't want me to. When they said I had to use up holiday, and I went home, thought about it, went back and saw my manager the next day. I said, yes. And I said, I'm going to take January off. He said, you can't do that. It's the middle of our season. I said, well, you've taken my holidays off me. You want me to use a month? I'll take January off. And they agreed in the end. So we had perfect weather.
That's amazing. We were members of the Heratonga Tramping Club too. It was amazing.
A change of scenery. We used to do a summer trip. It was somewhere in about 14 days. We took the Tramping Club truck. We went down to Kaharangi National Park in Western Nelson. And I think the total cost for that trip, including getting across on the ferry, was about $110 for 14 days. We tramped Great Barrier and Little Barrier Islands. Once again, about $110 all up for ferries and everything. Yeah. But that was because we had friends who worked at Bird's Eye and so on. We got dehydrated food. Yeah. But there are other people there. You know, you go and see signs that have been shot at. Hunters haven't got something, so what do? They shoot signs up.
But anyway, so you retired here in Tamatea?
Yes. Little Elms isn't my only involvement in charitable work. I've raised funds for the Weka camp, which is the scout camp at Risington for their centennial. I managed to pull $100,000 out of a local gaming foundation for their Lucian block up there. I do a lot of sporting. I've got, I think, 4 days this month at cricket. We're doing ushering. I usher for the Hawke's Bay Rugby Union at McLean Park and over here at Tremaine Field when Ross Shield and other competitions like that. Yeah, I've kept very, very busy. My calendar is very, very full. I do Horse of the Year. I won't do 6 days there. I need a bit of a break. I'll do 5 days at Horse of the Year. Yeah, I just enjoy meeting people, seeing people, cycling. I've just done 5 days with the Elite Cycle Championships in Napier with the events, plus they had a fun ride, and then on Friday night we had the Criterium in Napier.
Yes, it got quite a lot of publicity about how good it was and how well organised. So anyway, that's enough. But in finishing, so, and I'd just like to say thank you for your contribution to Hawke's Bay and the rest of the country with all of your things you've done. Really? It's this sort of input that makes things happen. So thank you.
Pleasure.